Hi, this is James White once again for the Solution Series, sponsored by Celery Report, Celery.com, and Corey'sDigs.com. And I'm delighted to be, of course, joined, as always, by my wonderful co-host, Corey Lynn. Corey, it's good to see you today.
Good to see you, too.
And we are delighted. We've been so excited for this interview here. We're excited to have Catherine Austin Fitz with us here, and I'm going to give Catherine a proper introduction. Catherine Austin Fitz offers Solari Report subscribers a unique perspective on how to navigate the opportunities and risks in the global financial system and political economy. Catherine is the president of Solari Incorporated, publisher of the Solari Report, and managing member of Solari Investment Advisory Services, LLC. Catherine served as managing director and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street investment bank Dillon Reed & Company, Incorporated, as Assistant Secretary of Housing and Federal Housing Commissioner at the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development in the first Bush administration, and was the president of Hamilton Securities Group, Incorporated. Catherine has designed and closed over $25 billion of transactions and investments to date and has led portfolio and investment strategy for $300 billion of financial assets and liabilities. And we're so delighted to have Catherine Austin Fitz joining us today on the Solution Series. Catherine, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's great. We're going to talk about solutions.
Indeed. Yay! We are.
A whole hour is going to be solutions. I can't wait. And I was just watching last night. I was putting together some shelving in my garage while watching your three-part series on building family wealth. And I said, well, these are key points we definitely need to hit on, as far as, you know, all the financial tips and there's so many different areas you hit on in here that are so important that, and maybe it's not even necessarily about financial management, but time management and all the, you know, organization and these other areas that are equally as important. So I know you have.
So one of my taglines is it's not an investment strategy. It's a war strategy.
Yes.
Because, you know, if you and I were to talk, if the three of us were to talk through all of these sort of issues of how you manage your financial life and your resources, mm-hmm. if we were in a peacetime, it would be a very different conversation. Now we're in a very high friction environment and we're literally in war. We're at a spiritual war, a financial war, a legal war, a political war. And so, you know, a war strategy is different than just a plain old investment strategy.
Right.
And that's what you have to understand. This is not just financial planning. This is war planning. So,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And you have some great risk management and navigation tools. So that might be a good place to start.
So I want to keep the risk management part of this simple, but risk that, you know, a lot, think of this as sort of putting milk in a bucket. If you have a hole in the bucket, you're never going to fill up the bucket with milk, right? And without good risk management, you've basically got a hole in your bucket because we are in a war and we are dealing with very dangerous predators. There's a lot of financial fraud. So it's exceptionally important that you do two things. The first is you have a good map. If you're going to California, you don't just pick up and drive there from Philadelphia without a map. You get a good map. And a lot of people are sort of roaming around the financial world and they don't have a good map of what's going on in the world and what that means to the, you know, the exercise of their resource budget, so to speak. And it's not just your money, it's your time. Your time is your most precious asset. Your health is, you know, equally a precious asset. So you want to have a good map. And I assume if they're listening to this team, they probably are on their way. If they don't have a good map, they're on their way to getting one. But investing in a good map and investing the time you need to get a good map is really important. So, you know, don't try to drive to California financially. Don't try to drive to financial California without a good map. That's number one. Number two is you can lose so much. Again, if you're putting milk in the bucket and you've got a hole in the bucket. So let me give you an example of the cost of poor risk management. One mother dealing with a severely autistic child, in VAX2, estimated that a severely autistic child was going to cost you $1 to $5 million present value over that child's life. And part of that was you were going to have to provide for that child's care, you know, beyond your death. And if you look at the time it would take the parents to care for that child, the time commitment in addition to the money is extraordinary. So one poor healthcare choice can result in wiping out 100% of a financial, an entire family's net worth. I once had quite a squabble with a grandparent who said, you know, it's not my decision whether or not my child vaccinates my grandchildren. I said, really? You know, does your child have $1 to $5 million? He said, no. I said, do you? He said, yes. And if your grandchild is vaccine injured, are you going to pay the $1 to $5 million to take care of them? And he said, yes. And I said, well, did you work your whole life and build your own business and kill yourself for that business to be successful simply to fund your grandchildren's vaccine injuries? And he said, I see your point.
So, good point.
No kidding.
Right. So what I'm saying is, you know, if you spend your whole life putting the milk in the bucket, but you don't plug the hole in the bucket, you know, you're going to have a problem. So again, back to war strategy, you need to understand the risks in the environment, the predators in the environment, and make sure, you know, there's nothing like ducking a Scud missile to save you money. So good risk management is important, and I know you have a lot, Corey, on your website about risk management. We have a ton in Soleri, so we don't need to hang on that. But I just want to stress the importance of, you know, don't kill yourself your whole life to get milk in the bucket if you don't make sure the bucket doesn't have a hole in it.
Catherine, I have a question for you, if I can. You know, in my younger days, I helped my uncle start a couple of medical clinics and work with him there. He was a great clinician. Terrible at doing like books and financial stuff, but a great clinician. Do you recommend people and come to terms maybe sometimes that they may need to have some of that financial stuff, you know, farmed out to a third party because they just, you know, like I said, he's brilliant when it comes to being a doctor, not so much when it comes to financial. How would you recommend people that have that?
So for someone like that, I would make sure they find an absolutely trustworthy. They need two people. They need a really good bookkeeper, and then they need an external CPA and probably an external lawyer. You want two people checking everything. You want to make sure you and the bookkeepers are both signing all the checks. And you have to take time. I don't care how terrible you are at that. You have to take a couple hours a month to sit down and review your cash flows monthly. You know, review your financial statements. You have to take the time to have a budget. So you have to spend time on it. You don't have to be good at it if you have a good bookkeeper and a good CPA. Now, I'm going to say something I'm going to say constantly throughout this hour, and that is the single most important thing you need to focus on in your financial life is to associate with people of integrity. If you have a bookkeeper who has great integrity, you're in great shape. If you don't, you're in terrible shape. So I'll give you an example. I used to be an investment, I still am an investment advisor, but I don't do individual clients now. But once upon a time, I had a client who was going to just hire a bookkeeper without doing background checks. And I said, you can't do that. She said, oh, she comes highly recommended, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I said, look, this is best practices. I want you to run a formal security check on her. Tell her you're doing it. You know, no secrets, but it's best practices, you know, because financial planners are really big investment advisors on best practices. So I insisted. And so she did. And sure enough, it turned out the woman had been indicted for fraud at one point and for embezzling. And of course, the woman, when she found out there was going to be a security check on her, you know, took off. But one mistake in terms of integrity and making sure the people that you share responsibility or give responsibility to, making sure they have integrity is the most important function.
Right.
So you're going to need to depend on a good bookkeeper, and you're going to need to depend on a good CPA, and probably you're going to need a good attorney as well. And you want to, but you want to invest in building those relationships, maintaining those relationships, and making sure you have great people. And I know he understands, because, you know, it's the same as getting a lousy doctor versus a great doctor.
Right.
You know, a doctor is not a doctor. There's a wide variation in quality.
Especially right now with some of the stuff that's being rolled out, those are going to become really key.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And another thing you want to do, and I'm trying to get our conversion going so that we can do all of our accounting software on open source software instead of a lot of the providers who are very invasive about data. But the more you can do to keep the data on your servers and to use open source software to keep your privacy of your data protected, the better off you are. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So take the time. It'd be great if you have a bookkeeper who can know how to deal with the systems as well. If not, you're going to have to spend money on, again, people of high integrity. So what you have to do in any business, no matter how small, is you have to invest in having people with great integrity.
And that kind of falls under organize, under the living equity section that you talk about, which I really like that section when you get into the spiritual grounding and prayer and intuition, because that's so important right now.
So, yeah. So when I talk about building wealth, I talk in terms of both living equity and financial equity. You know, a lot of people just think about money. The people who run the planet, some of whom trained me long ago, you know, they can just print money out of thin air. They don't care about money. And they understand that all financial wealth begins and ends with real assets and living, you know, with life and people. So, you know, you always want to start with living equity and getting the living equity issues right. And for example, one of the documentaries I often used to recommend to clients is called Divorce Core. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Mm-mm, no.
Okay. Well,
no.
If you're ready for something more terrifying than the worst horror movie you've ever seen, watch Divorce Core, because it's how it describes how the U.S. divorce industry and courts destroy people and families and rip off all their money. It's frightening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, and I've been through a divorce. So, and I was very lucky because I refused to have a fight and let the lawyers take me down. But it's a perfect example of what happens and how much money you can lose when you get the living equity questions wrong. So living equity is about building up your health, your life, your skills, and investing and encouraging the skills and the, you know, the same in the people you love around you and, you know, in the people you deal with. So one of the reasons I love your work, Corey, is you're constantly trying to help people protect and build their living equity. That's what you do. And, you know, you try and help them protect their financial equity too, but you're like, I don't know.
Without realizing it. No.
Yeah, no, you're like a passionate mama bear and you're like, don't do that. You know, that's trying to protect and help people protect their living equity. Our most precious asset is our time. So let's start with the one I love, which is prayer. I really think we're in a spiritual war. And I also believe that if you are connected to the divine, and, you know, I love the founding documents of the United States because they remind us that our freedom comes to us by divine authority. But if you connect to the divine, I believe that all intelligence is accessible through time and space to you, particularly if you are in a divine mind, if you try and stay in a divine mind. And I really discovered this, you know, I'd heard that many times from some of the great preachers that I admire, but I never really believed it until I was in a period when I had, you know, I had no other access to intelligence but prayer. That way, you know, it was prayer or nothing. And so I tried it and it worked and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And I think it saved my life because, you know, at all the times I would have run to the hospital, I couldn't. Instead, I went to prayer and I got the answers, and the answers were far more economic and, you know, and they worked. But I would only have discovered this, you know, they always say that only drowning men can see Jesus, but I would never have discovered if I hadn't been forced to it. But I really do think that we have a way of accessing intelligence, particularly if we can use prayer, but also if we can we can work with each other, both, you know, sharing intelligence or praying together. So, right. I think one of the things, you know, is if you're going to build living equity and financial equity in this environment, you're going to have to cut away from the herd. And the question is, how do we do that? And part of that is helping each other do that. Anyway, right. So I'm really big on prayer and also intuition. I've discovered that, both for building a better map and for, really navigating an increasingly dangerous physical environment. So dealing with crime, I grew up in a poor neighborhood and had to do a lot of running and ducking and fighting. and I think intuition, you know, our intuition really, can guide us. So part of this is learning to trust your intuition, listening to your intuition, you know, exercising your intuition. So I start in living equity with sort of prayer and those navigation tools. The second thing is organizing. A lot of good financial planning and the kind of things that build wealth depend on just spending time. One of the things you learn when you become an investment advisor, it's all about process. You know, every week you want to sit down and budget 2 hours to spend time on your financial life, and you want to commit to investing in the process. So, for example, one of the things I encourage everyone to do is to archive. You know, you can't depend on other people for your documents. You've got to take time to really archive your documents and make sure you have a record. So, for example, after Katrina, it was the people who had all their documents, their insurance documents, that got their money and came back up. If you couldn't find your documents, you were in trouble. So, so part of organization is taking the time to invest in managing your life. Even if you delegate all your work out to bookkeepers and CPAs and asset managers and bankers and other people, you're the board of trustees. You've got to govern. So,
right. Well, and organizing and having documents pretty much saved your life. So given how we're moving forward with some of these things, I think that's going to become more and more important.
So one of the groups that trained me were the Bushies, and they used to say, "He who archives writes history."
I'm sorry. To interrupt?
Yeah, no, go.
Would you recommend, you know, the important documents? I've heard, you know, stay away from maybe the safety deposit boxes because those can be seized, and they have been seized in other cases. Do you recommend like a home safe and a good secure home safe for those documents that are indispensable?
So when you're in the kind of war we're in, nothing is completely safe. So I kind of think of a squirrel. I like things in multiple places on the theory that, you know, if two get taken out, the other two might make it. If you go to Solari and put archive in the search box, you'll pick up a new piece that our general counsel did this year on archiving. And here's what I like to do. I like to have multiple digital records in multiple places, but then I like to have a fireproof home safe. Now, you know, I was always concerned about the normal fire. If you look at what we've been experiencing in California and some of the places around the world, we're talking about much higher heats. So when you get a fireproof safe, you want to grapple with, you know, do you want to be able to beat a California fire or a regular home fire? We just caveat it with that. But I don't think you want to depend, even with a really good fireproof safe, I don't think you want to depend on one location. I also don't think you want to depend on one jurisdiction. So I like to have multiple backups and multiple jurisdictions.
And, that's smart.
Yeah, especially if you're in a bad jurisdiction. If you're in a bad jurisdiction, you want to have multiple backups in good jurisdictions.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one place that is really important to archive. And of course we know, we just saw the Congress provide $80 billion for IRS enforcement. But for many, many years, I keep beating the drum with anybody who trades crypto. For God's sakes, keep independent copies of your record, including offline. Because, you know, during the pumps and dumps, during the dumps, the tax auditors come piling in. And if you've been depending on exchanges to have your records and the exchanges go down, you could be in real trouble. So make sure if you're trading crypto that you have independent copies of all your archives. I've seen now situations where essentially the tax enforcement in some jurisdictions have announced really draconian, serious audits coming in the crypto space. So, you know, please make sure, don't wait for them to knock on your door. Please make sure you've got your archives, you know, in great shape.
Yeah. Yeah. So then investing in people, and I know we've talked about this before, but I think this is really key when not just in family, but in community. You know, I know some people that are fortunate that have money and they're not quite sure where to put that money right now. And I think, I'm like, well, gosh, I would be paying someone to do your food gardens and getting gardeners to come over, you know, the local farmers, obviously, but I think that's really, really important.
So I'll be blunt. I'm a people investor. That's my favorite thing to invest in is people.
Yeah.
And let me, the best way to explain this is with stories. So the famous story that I tell constantly, but I think you can't hear it enough. So I spent 11 years in very ugly litigation with the Department of Justice. It was a very immersive process. You know, the black neighborhoods used to call it the beat down. So I spent 11 years in beat down and then another 4 years in tax hell. Anyway, so, coming into the litigation when things got really tense in the first year or two, a real effort was made to cut off all my income, all my credit, all my, you know, anything. And I was a very wealthy person and money was rolling in. You know, I was always very good at making money. I was a successful investment banker. So, you know, suddenly I went from having an overhead of $1 million a month for my business and personal life to having, you know, having to do it all in $2,000 a month. That was fun. Anyway, so one of the things I realized was I had lent or gifted to other people $250,000. So at that point, you know, a variety of friends and family either have received gifts or owed me $250,000. So, I had a wealthy uncle who was very, very supportive. And he decided, well, she helped everybody else, so we're going to help her or pay her back. And over the next 11 years, people, friends and family gifted or paid back $250,000, almost exactly to the dime. It was like the big wheel of karma. And what I realized is it was the one source of money that the bad guys could never cut off from me. In other words, they couldn't steal it. They couldn't take it. They couldn't. And it was really funny because they had put my 401k under audit right before they hit me with a big round of subpoenas. So I couldn't use it to finance the effort. And I busted the 401k, paid $225,000 in taxes. And when the litigation was over and we settled and I had a lot of money come in, my CPA said, let's fund up the 401k. I said, I'm never making that mistake again. I'm taking all that money and I'm bonusing it out to the people who helped me or lent me money, I'm going to pay them all back, you know, because I'm putting that money back out in the people bank because it's safer out there in the people bank than it is, you know, sitting and, you know, at my 401k had been at T. Rowe Price. I don't want to pick on T. Rowe Price, but it's safer than back in a 401k at T. Rowe Price. I'd rather have it out there in the people bank. But I'll give you, I used to see this with clients. I'd have very wealthy clients who would come in and they would have kids and grandkids who were struggling and not making it in an environment that was very difficult, like the financial crisis. And they would tell me that their financial advisor said, if you don't have $25 million, you're not secure. So you can't afford to help your kid buy a house because, you know, you got to keep it, you know, in the national defense infrastructure, paying dividends and working towards getting that $25 million. I said, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. When the you know what hits the who know what, who's going to be there for you? It's going to be your daughter and your grandson. So stop financing the national security state and start backing, you know, the people who are watching your back.
Right. Well, that's one of the questions I have that a lot of people have asked me. So I've known some people who have completely drained their 401ks now just because of everything going on, and right. other people that are contemplating doing that, but then they're concerned because of that tax hit. And same with portfolios in that regard. You know, if we take money out of this, then we're going to get hit with these taxes. And I just think, well, gosh, you're kind of playing against a corrupt house right now, and you're gambling on that this money's still going to be there, and you're going to keep taking these.
Right. But here's the thing. You know, I can't stress this enough. Everybody is unique.
Right.
Never give or take generic advice. You know, so people say, what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals? It's like, I know nothing about your situation, you know, and
right.
well, actually it's Larry. There is a blog post called What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Precious Metals? And it walks you through sort of the algorithm of how to figure that out for yourself.
Okay.
You know, but so in that case, you can kind of give somebody an algorithm and walk them through it. But you are, each person is unique. And when I was an investment advisor, I would have clients who I would say, yeah, pull the money out of the 401k. And others I'd say, no. And, you know, a lot of it depends on fees and taxes and when and how. I do think we're in an environment where clearly, if you look at the amount of times in a year that the federal government is breaking the law, you know, we're looking at a increasingly lawless situation. And so, you want to remember you're in partnership with somebody who doesn't necessarily keep their word. And mm-hmm. we may wake up one day and they say, okay, all 401ks are converted to annuities that have to be invested in U.S. treasuries. And there you go. And so I would rather not get close to that date.
Catherine, I need to interject for a second if I can. The wealthy, from what I understand, they form trusts, and they have their money in trusts, and that seems to be a little that insulates them a little bit more. Is that something that may be a whole other show? Is that something that you would recommend for people at certain levels of wealth to look at developing a trust to protect your wealth some?
It depends on how much money you have. You know, if you're at 5 million or more, first of all, you want to look at trust for the purpose of avoiding probate and, you know, passing money to your beneficiaries. And anybody can do that with any amount. So it's worth investigating trust just as a way of handling, you know, the process of managing your estate. So that's good estate planning. But I would say the one rule I have in this environment is never give up control. And a lot of the vehicles that you have to engage in to avoid, you know, or protecting intergenerational capital from wealth using trusts, you run into a situation where you have to give up control. And I would never give up control to save money on taxes. Now, one of the reasons I created, you know, Solaria is a C corporation. One of the reasons I created a corporation was so that I could basically build an operation in a certain way pre-tax. So, you know, there are ways of doing this if you build your own company. So one of the things I love about building a company is you have a way of building wealth through essentially unrealized capital gains if you have a company that you're building and is successful. Now, let me keep going on people, because one of the things you'll see is there are many opportunities you can exploit if you're willing to basically conspire as a family. So one of my favorite books on building wealth is called Family Wealth by Jay Hughes. It's technically James Hughes. And Hughes is, he and his dad were lawyers who served very wealthy families. And the book is focused on how to protect wealth from deterioration over time, you know, so that the third generation doesn't destroy the family wealth. But interestingly enough, if you look at how Hughes sort of talks about how a family can conspire together to help each other be successful, and not just successful financially, successful as people, you know, sort of helping each other live their dream.
Right.
Those same tactics help you become wealthy. And, you know, so it's a book I would really recommend to people, and it encourages families to go to work and, you know, sort of in an intentional, explicit way, start focusing on, okay, what do you want to achieve in your life? What do you want to achieve in your life? How do we help each other? You know, one of the things that really amazed me was, you know, I come out of a world where from the time I can remember, we were always engaging in conspiracies. Conspiracies were how you invented your world. And conspiracies were considered good. They were wonderful things. It was like, let's get together and, you know, we do this deal or we come up with this plan. I'll never forget, there was a guy who was very high up in the municipal government in New York, and then he went to work for one of the top CEOs in New York. And he called me. There was a developer who's going to ruin a park. And he called me up and he said, he's going to ruin the blah, blah. I said, you're kidding? No, he said, yeah. He said, let's stop him. Let's screw it all up without him being able to figure out who we are. You know, because you could get in real trouble if they figured out who was, you know. But we used to, you know, the world was basically built by conspiracies. And we thought conspiracies were wonderful things. So then I get booted out of the establishment. I discovered everybody thinks conspiracies are terrible. And they don't seem to understand that makes us powerless. Right?
Right.
Right. Yeah. If you build your world through transactions, you know, whether it's starting companies or financing companies or starting projects or blah, 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 you know, that's how you do it with conspiracies. So I really encourage, if you read Hughes's book, it'll give you a sense of how to start thinking about that. But, you know, your kids and starting your kids' businesses can be the best businesses in the world. I had a grandmother. I won't bore you with the particular details. I'll keep it confidential, but I had a wonderful step grandmother who for years invested in one of her grandchildren who wanted to be a painter. Everybody thought he was mad as a hatter, you know, having dropped out of the, or sort of left the, graduated from the best schools in the world and then decided he wanted to go, trip around to India and then become a painter. And she just bought his paintings for years to keep him afloat. He hit it big, became a very famous and successful painter. And when she died, one of the most valuable assets in her estate was her collection of her grandson's paintings.
Wow.
So, well, you see that a lot. I mean, a lot of businesses are financed by families who just, you know, want to help their kids succeed. So, one of the most tragic things I used to see in families, and we have an article called Gifting to the Children We Love. You can find it at Salieri in a search. You would have people in the family who had money and people in the family who had time, but they couldn't kind of figure out how to get together. And some give time and others give money to help the kids and their family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a perfect example of the absence of a good conspiracy or conspiracy thinking.
Right.
You know, not going to work. Another one of my favorite stories is I had a friend of one of my relatives who I liked very much. And he said, you know, the stock market just makes me really nervous. I said, do your kids have mortgages? He had five kids and they were very, you know, this is a family of fine character. And, he said, yeah, they all have mortgages. And I said, well, why don't you refinance your kids' mortgages out and keep all the money in the family? So he said, you know, that's a great idea. So I saw him many years later and I said, how'd it go? You know, did you do it? What happened? He said, yeah, I refinanced all five kids out of their mortgage. I get a check every month. It's great. He said, I missed the up in the stock market, but I sleep like a baby. And the beauty of it is they're going to get they're going to get the capital anyway when he dies. So.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So now, you know, it can work. If you lend money to a disreputable, no good member of your family, you're going to get burnt.
Right.
So there's a real craft to investing in people, but, you know, and so traditionally I do a lot investing with people. And, another one of my favorite stories is, after COVID-19, started, I had a wonderful former client who called me and she said, I just sold a big piece of real estate. Should I put it in precious metals or real estate? And I said, what's the point of owning assets if you don't have an army to protect it? I said, you want to take all that money and give it to litigators to go protect yourself and all of us. And so, right. In fact, she did, she made some big donations to some litigation operations. And we have a crowdfund called Take Action, which, you know, if you go to Take Action, you can go see some of the litigation groups we support. One of the big ones being the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, which was started by the folks at West and Price to just help small farmers get legal teams to defend them and defend our local food supply. So anyway, investing in people, the question for each one of us is when the you-know-what hits the you-know-what, which it already has, but it's going to get worse.
Right.
Who can you count on? Who's going to be there for you? You know, who's, whether it's your time or money, who are you investing in and who's going to invest in you?
Right. So I have a question. There's a lot of people, we're seeing a lot of people, well, using cash, which is great. We keep encouraging that. But also a lot of people are, you know, either taking a big chunk out or draining their bank accounts because they just don't trust the banks at all. And I'm just wondering what your thinking is as far as, I know you'll say get your money out of the bigger banks and the central banks and find a local community bank or credit union. But as far as people having cash on hand, you know, I realize this is going to vary depending on how much cash people have. But
right.
What would you say as far as where people's minds are with how much money do I keep in a bank? How much money should I keep, you know, in my safe at home? And do I really want to pull all my money out of the bank or just move it over?
You know, so I'm a squirrel. I have pots all over the place.
Yeah.
I don't believe in having money. You know, so everything has risk. There is no such thing as safety. And I want to underscore this. When there's no law, nothing is safe except what you can protect with a gun.
Right.
Okay. And without, if there's no community and no civilization, nothing's safe.
That's all a right, great so. T-shirt, by the way.
Okay. There's your opportunity. So, but you know, I keep hammering it. James Quaid at Salir just asked me to, I just recorded at, you know, that sort of rant, which I give almost weekly on Ask Catherine. So he just put it up on Ask Catherine as a separate thing because he said this rant is one you've got to, you know, you've got to highlight. But again, there's no, our problem is without national or individual sovereignty and with our taxes financing an operation, which increasingly conducts itself in a way, you know, essentially outside the law and thinks it has sovereign immunity. From the law, you know, nothing is safe. Now, I go back to the chessboard. You array your players and try and protect your queen, right? Mm-hmm. So I have, I did a show called 20 or what is it? Ways to stash your cash in 2022. And I think I had 24 different ways. So, I won't go through all 24.
Now, is that a public article or just?
Yeah, that's public.
Awesome.
That's public. It was a Financial Rebellion. Mercola republished it.
Okay.
And I've listed out, I think in one of the commentaries at Solaria, I listed out the ways of doing it. We also published a commentary called Using Cash that sort of goes through how you use cash. Again, you want to make sure you use your receipts, you save your receipts. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure you're doing the record keeping you need to support doing cash. Anyway, so I have money in the bank. I have money in the safe. I have safes and, you know, cause I both have a place in Europe and a place in Tennessee. So I have money in the safe. I have money in the bank. And I increasingly am leaving money with people, you know, around, so that I call them nodes. It's a Solaria node, you know. A friend of mine is holding $2,000 for me, and if I come through, I can use it.
Nice.
So, yeah, so I like to have, and I have encouraged everybody to put as much money as they can in building non-perishable inventories. So, you know, there's no reason not to have 2 or 3 years of office supplies if you're sure you're going to use the stuff, right?
Right.
Anyway, so check out the ways to stash cash in 2022 because, you know, there are many different ways that you can stash cash all over the place, but you have to be prepared if you have money at home. You know, if you get a home invasion, how are you going to deal with it? Now we have a great interview. It's public it's in the library called Hidden Safes with Dan Perkins, who runs one of the best safe companies in the United States. And he tells the story, you know, he's got a thousand different ways of hiding multiple safes in your house. So, but you need to think through the security issues of how you're gonna, you know, how are you gonna protect cash that you have at home? Because there are risks. Now, there are also risks if you have it in the safe deposit box or if you have it deposited. You know, I have tremendous confidence in my bank. I never worry about my bank. Now, can the government come in and shut my bank down? Yeah, but they can come into my house and shut me down too. Right? So.
I'm a big fan of those common everyday items that you can that are used to hide cash and
Absolutely.
valuables, and they look just like everyday items. People that have to go through every item in your house to find some of these things sometimes. You know what I'm
Right.
talking
Now,
about.
the important thing to remember is the number one way people lose precious metals in my experience is they forget where they put it. So I would just ask in your safe, you have a little code book and you write down where you put it. You know,
Well,
because
that's
there's nothing worse than, you know, putting, I remember once I had 20 Cougar Ants in socks and I couldn't find them. It took me a day.
What about when it comes to precious metals, as far as having tangible in hand versus keeping them, you know, where they're held through, I don't even know the terms for it.
Well, here's the thing. If you own precious metals, you can hold them in securities form, at which point they're essentially a bank IOU priced in gold or silver. You can hold them in a depository in an allocated or unallocated account. And you can have that depository be in many jurisdictions, some of which I would describe as terrific and others I would describe as lousy. Okay. So there's wide variation on the depository. There are digital services where you can interact essentially with a depository through digital means, and that's another one. And then you can hold them basically in your physical possession or put them in a safe deposit box. Obviously, you can drive down and put them to a depository close. So there's wide variation in all the different, you know, possibilities. Now, anytime you put precious metals with a business, whether, you know, it's through securities, whether it's through a depository, either direct or through an IRA or in a safe deposit box, you know, the government can come in and grab. So we know when the United States had, you know, when the gold was seized, everybody who had their gold at the bank lost their gold and everybody who had it at home kept it. So, but the reality is, you know, you may want to worry about your government. You need to worry about your neighbors. I had one former client who literally forgot that she had a large amount of silver in her basement when she sent the plumber down. And a couple months later, she realized it was gone. But
Oh,
it was a
wow.
couple months. Yeah.
That's not good. Now,
No.
what about as far as stocks and mutual funds and portfolios, you know, with, and this is not my area, but I have friends who's, you know, who are heavily invested, and I know what you're going to say about moving it around and don't be in with the bad guys, you know, don't be investing in the bad companies, but what about just as far as what about older people, for example, where they've got the money sitting in there, but we know that most likely for a while, we're not going to see it come back up, and we don't know what all is going to be pulled on the bad front there with the corrupt. So I'm just
Right. So any money you have in the security system, you know, I'm sort of, my expectation is that a long-term bull in equities is likely to continue. You know, but not without wild swings, and we're clearly in a major correction. Here's the reality. You know, the negative on the securities market is you don't trust the operation of it. But that's true for every system we deal with, from the weather to the post office. You know, I once had a
Right.
precious metals dealer say, you know, the security system is corrupt. I said, really? What do you think happens with the postal system that your precious metals mails through?
Right,
You
right.
know, so we have to live in this world, and increasingly all the systems we depend on are corrupt.
Right.
At the same time, I'm, you know, sort of, I believe if we're going to have a successful human future, we need liquid stock markets. And the question is, how can you have liquid stock markets without ending up with Spectre? Do you know what I mean by Spectre? Everybody
No.
see the James Bond movie? In the James Bond movie, Spectre is the bad guy, right? And he's the Spectre is a transnational organized crime syndicate that's trying to run the world through satellites.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's my vision of what our, you know, a lot of people call them globalists. I call them Spectre. Yeah. Anyway, so when you deal with securities markets, the question is, how can we build liquid equity markets without Spectre? So, you know, one of the things I do with my job is I study and look at companies every day all around the world. And the world, there's a whole portion of the economy globally that is run by great companies. I mean, yeah. Great people, they get up every day, they go to work, they do something really important.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite companies, and I won't name them, has a huge market share globally of bicycle components. Now, I love bicycles, so mm-hmm. I'm always on the search for great bicycle companies. But, you know, and it's if you look at what they work for decades to build great bicycle components. You know, it's not something you read about in the newspaper. It's not something you and I write big headlines about.
Right.
But, you know, they're great people. It's a great company. They have a nice dividend. You know what? I love them. I look at what they've accomplished. To me, it's a really, you know, I think a great company is a beautiful thing. So I confess I love to me, a great company is a sort of a living equity miracle. It's a little culture. It's a little world. And they're great companies all over the world. And they're great entrepreneurs all over the world building great companies, you know, new ones and old ones too. So I want to invest in them. And, you know, part of the problem is if you are an American citizen and you're encouraged to invest in the stock market, you don't know what you're investing in. It's, you know, they put you in a big index and it's full of all sorts of stuff and companies you want nothing to do with. And
right.
You know, it's a nightmare. Now that's not what I do. The way I right now I'm on a savings plan. I put money in every month, but I'm putting money into stocks that I love and my portfolio is hedged. So right now in this environment, I would always want to be hedged. One of our equity overviews, I don't know if you've watched it, is on, you know, what is a hedge portfolio and how do you manage a hedge portfolio so that if you do get a huge down in the stock market, you know, your down is very much modified from what it would be otherwise.
Catherine, I'd like to ask you about the dollar, if I can. I had David Morgan on my broadcast about a year ago. I think you know David.
Uh-huh.
I'd ask him specifically. I said, David, you talk about, you know, everybody talks about the dollar collapse. And I said, is there really another alternative currency right now that's positioned to be the world reserve currency? He says, no, not now. That was about a year ago. Do you think that has changed in the last year? And do you recommend people invest in dollars, you know, in dollar-denominated investments? Or are you looking like more emerging markets, perhaps?
So I far prefer real assets. And now when I say real assets, to me, a good company, you know, I always use railroads as an example. You know, the stock may be denominated in dollars, but it's pricing a real business and real assets. Just like a ETF and a gold is being priced in gold. It's not being priced in dollars. In this environment, I do not like fixed income for a variety of reasons. One is credit, but the currencies are all being debased. So why buy a fixed income denominated in a currency that's getting debased? I think the dollar is still what I would call dangerous and dominant. So there's nothing on the global stage that can compete with it right now as a currency. Not to say that the BRICS don't have a chance of putting something together
right,
that
could
take away real
too.
Market. Well, they can take market share, but they can't, you know, they can't supplant it. And part of the reason they can is not because of the dollars created by the Federal Reserve. It's because of the euro dollar deposits. You know, you've got banks in the UK and Europe who've created huge amounts of dollars that are floating around the world. So, I just think for now that the dollar is dominant and dangerous. But what I would be very concerned about is the continued debasement of all fiat currencies globally.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's why I would much rather be in hedged equity than bonds. And in fact, if you look at, you know, equities, if you look at long treasuries, equities have outperformed long treasuries this year, and hedged equity has outperformed both of them. So I would much rather be in a hedged equity product than in a fixed income product. But part of that is the debasement. The other is credit. If you look at all the bonds on the planet, there's not enough equity right now. It's like a house that's underwater. You know, the house is worth $200,000, the mortgage is $1 million, and the equity is -$800,000.
Yeah, right.
And well, here's the thing. The logical thing to do is for the family to get together and say, let's do all the things we need to make the value of the house go up. But instead of doing that, we have a few people saying, no, we'd rather centralize control and destroy the house. Mm. So what we've got is we've got a global economy where we are paying an enormous price to support organized crime, centralizing power.
Right. So here's something that I often ponder that I've actually never talked with you about. So let's just say hypothetically, we know we're seeing the writing on the wall, and we see that we know sometime within the next month, they're going to flip that switch and they're going to move completely to digital currency. And they've already been working on the digital IDs, of course. And at that point, if we all say, everybody pull your money out of the banks, everyone get all your cash, then everything's operating.
Well,
off
remember,
of the digital
they can
system.
Outlaw cash. They can What's outlaw that? Cash. They can outlaw cash.
Right. Right. So in that predicament.
So let's say in that environment, you have 2 years of food, 2 years of non-perishables, you know, 2 years of stuff worth of stuff you can trade. And you've got some land, you've got water, you've even got a wood stove, you've got your own energy. The question is, do you have a group of 100, 200, 300 people who you can start to do local currencies and trade with, or use your gold and silver? If you go to Solari, there's a silver and gold payment calculator, and they can help you just start, you know, just start trading using gold and silver. You can start a community currency on the just do it method. You don't need a plan. You don't need to do anything. You just need to start using your gold and silver.
Right.
And in the states that have canceled the sales tax on gold and silver, you know, it's pretty feasible to do. So there's a ton you can do with your state legislators to make, you know, very healthy, liquid financial markets, both currency and equity, happen locally. And we just, on our second quarter wrap-up, we just wrote a whole piece to our legislators, and Pete Kennedy and I are about to do an interview on here, all the different things you can ask your state legislators to do. But here's what I do want to say, Corey, because you spent a lot of time understanding the control grid. Mm-hmm. The sort of the central bankers have been working for decades to build a control grid, and there are thousands of different pieces of that control grid in place.
Yep.
But you know, when they add the vaccine passports and CBDCs, that's when you put the last two pieces in place that convert the whole financial transaction system into digital concentration camps.
Yep.
And that's what we have to stop. And that's why, you know, one, if you're not out of the big banks, and two, using cash as much as possible and keeping your receipts. I don't want you to get in trouble with the tax guys. You know, keeping your receipts. If you're not doing that now, you want to start doing that now, because every time we increase the market share of cash and we operate in paper, so filing your taxes in paper, if you're willing to do that, you know, understand the issues if you're going to file in paper. But the more we dial back our dependency on the digital system, the harder it is for them to going to be, you know, to do that. Apparently, Japan just announced they're not doing CBDCs. People don't want it.
Nice.
Right.
Nice. And I know you said in Ireland they were trying to push something too, and they backed down.
Right. They tried to one of the big banks tried to cancel cash. And, you know, you had a lot of people dependent on the world. I've heard so many stories.
Yeah.
They just revolted. One guy told me a funny story. He's on a train where some guy was taking the train into Dublin to read them the Riot Act. He'd been banking there his whole life. He was canceling his account. He was so furious. So they, you know, but you know, when your grandmother walks into the middle of the bank and starts screaming at you, you know you got a problem, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Catherine, do you see a move towards decentralization? I know even though a financial system may collapse, for example, I don't think local economies, people like you and bartering with your neighbor, you know, you know how to chop down a tree, they have a dozen of eggs. I think economies will still go. So I don't think it's all just doom and gloom as maybe people think.
No, locally. The best, so I see a tremendous move to decentralize. The best investment you can possibly make is to invest in your own resiliency. So I always tell the story. I had a client who was complaining that the yields on her stock market was falling and her water bill was going up. I said, she lived in rural air. I said, this is really simple. Sell your stock and build a well. What is it about this you don't understand? Well, we've been intermediated by large corporations. We need to disintermediate. So look at your financial statements and your balance sheet. Where is every economically intelligent way you can do to disintermediate so that you shrink your balance sheet, I just paid off. I don't know if I told you this, Corey. I just paid off my mortgage. John was talking. We did something on money and markets, and he was talking about the Bank of England's move to basically pull in legal tender and issue notes without saying that they were legal tender. Mm-hmm. And the question is, if you don't have legal tender, then your creditors can reject the money. They don't have to accept it. And I said, I don't even want to worry about this. That's it. My mortgage. So I didn't have much left, but boom, I said, that's it. That's smart. Shrinking your balance sheet.
Right.
Right. And this is an environment where you don't want to have debt. I mean, I was wildly successful when I got slammed with the litigation, and I didn't have a lot of debt, but I still had debt, and it was a real food fight, and they can put you in a debt trap. So paying off your debt, your CPA may tell you it's smart from a tax standpoint, but what I'm telling you from a war strategy, it may not be smart. So don't be afraid to pay off your debt.
Right. Absolutely. Well, is there anything else that we want to cover before we close this out? Lots of good information here.
There are a couple more things I just want to point out. We have a great article on how to find a good local bank. Mm-hmm. And again, you don't want to just find a local bank. You want to find a great local bank. You want to find a bank where the governance and the management has high integrity. There's nothing better than having your financial transactions managed by a group of people you can talk to, you can trust, you have a relationship, they know you, they know, I'll never forget getting to Romania and my ATM card wouldn't work and I got on my phone and called the bank. They all know me and they're like, where are you? The Romanian airport? Really? And they just stayed on the phone with me and worked it through until... then another time I was in Verona to see Beethoven's symphony in the open air. It was Verona. Wow. And I'm walking down the street with friends. We just stopped and got lemon gelato. I'm walking down the street and the phone rings and it's my banker saying, a wonderful person from the bank saying, we just got a charge on your credit card, $500 at Paris Disney World. We really don't think that's you. And I said, you got it. Shut down the card. But they knew there's no way Catherine's at Disney World. But having that, having your financial transactions managed by people that know you and you can trust, it's such a gift. If you have a problem with your taxes, but I don't know, it's just a gift. So you deserve a great local bank. Go find one, open an account, make sure you get to know them, make sure it's working. Don't close your other accounts until you're through at least one tax cycle, just in case you need a record. So that's number one. The second thing, and this is something that Corey, you can tell them about as much as I can, and that is beware your terms and conditions. If you look at financial payment systems now, especially online, and you read, I just went through a process where I had to read over 150-page tiny print terms and conditions, and finally I just said, no, I won't sign it.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting work. having to do this, but we have to because they sneak so much crap in there.
Well, the financial guides are now they're sneaking in frightening things, and and if you have a small business and you're taking payments online, you need to invest, you know, just budget some time, take a deep breath and say, okay, this week, no movies. I'm going to spend time trying to stay awake while I read the terms and conditions and get my mind around what's really going here. And, right. you know, I have to tell you, we have a great general counsel and she lived through 11 years of litigation and then 4 years of tax hell with me. I don't know if sometime I'll tell you the full Shaggy Dog tax story. I had to spend $150,000 on attorneys and CPAs, and I owed $0 in taxes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was wow. a very, well, I, the settlement came in and I went to my accountant and I said, I don't want to wait. I want to pay my taxes right away. I just want to get this over with before I bonus money out. She called me back 2 days later. She said, you won't believe this. We can't find your files. They're gone.
Huh.
And so it took me 6 months to pull the files back together.
Wow.
Okay. So let me keep going. There are a couple more things. There are a lot of opportunities in local investment. Local investment takes time and a lot of care. You can lose a lot of money if you don't do it right. A lot of the way to do it is to find smart people locally, either, you know, really excellent local business people or local people in real estate and property management who you can come in behind and sort of finance with them. But there are a lot of great opportunities and I would look for them because the way to get local resilience is to finance local energy options, is to finance local food options. You know, a lot of the really good food co-ops around the country have opportunities to loan or bank the food co-ops. Right. So, you know, network around quietly and discreetly and look for the real people who know what they're doing in terms of managing resources locally, who you can come in behind. You're going to find opportunities over time. So I would say that. The other thing I wanted to mention is insurance. You can waste a lot of money on stupid insurance. You can also spend a lot of money on insurance very, very wisely. Insurance is an area where I'm back to people of integrity. You want to find a great insurance broker who can really explain insurance and you want to make sure, especially on health or life, a very important one is accident. So, having proper insurance for, any liability that may be associated with car accidents, you know, car accidents and traffic fatalities are really rising tremendously. So you really want to take time to make sure you have your transportation liabilities and healthcare and accident and general liability taken care of. And so if you don't know a lot about insurance, you're going to have a much more successful life if you take the time to get good people in the insurance area who teach you and help you. And, you know, don't be afraid to spend money on insurance. One of the reasons I like precious metals, I divide investment in precious metals into two kinds of holdings. One is your core holdings and one is your investment holdings. The core holdings are really insurance. It's central bank insurance. And it's for periods of real chaos or when, you know, people lose faith in the government, or clearly faith. I think they've lost the faith in the central bankers. But, you know, I always say have enough gold to bribe the border guards. But I'm serious.
That's true.
No, I'm serious.
It's true.
You know, I had family friends who would tell you the only reason they were able to get out in time was they had gold coins buried in the backyard and they went in and they got them and that got them out.
Yeah. You know? Don't think about using your currency because it's going to be valueless. It has to be gold or silver because your local currency is probably not going to have any value at the border.
Right. But I'll tell you the currency that will do you the best good when that happens is friendships.
Yeah.
You know, it's alliances and friendships. And that's why I get back to people investing. You know, it's really funny. I'll never forget my first two trips when I had to drive around the Netherlands without QR codes. And the first thing I learned was, the world was really dividing up, and it was kind of nice because we got kicked out of all the bad places by the bad people, and we got welcomed into all these wonderful places by what it was, the world was separating, and it was good to be on that side. And but on one trip, I was sort of with a friend studying the water system here in Friesland, which is quite amazing. What I realized, the number one issue was, where were the friends who would let us use their bathroom? Right? Because there's no going into the restaurant using the bathroom. So it's either the forest or people you can trust, right? And so the question was, okay, where were our friends dotted all over the Northern Netherlands who would let us use their bathroom? So, a note is a place where you can pick up some cash, but it's also a place where you can use the bathroom, right?
Right. That's
And
important.
yeah, so, this is a game of, I come back to, it's a war strategy. It's not an investment strategy. And the question is, who are the people who are going to have your back? And, you want provisions and resiliency, planted all around in many places. And if you don't know where to stash your cash, check out that Financial Rebellion, because I think it's number 31. It's very useful. Anyway, lots more to say, but I know that's plenty for tonight. And I just want to thank you both very much for doing the solution series, because we have a lot to do, and we just have to keep chipping away at it. I always talk about turtling, and I think this solution series is really helping people get going, and that's what we all need to do, get going. And as we do, we create a lot more opportunity for each other together.
Right, absolutely. Well, and we appreciate you immensely for
Indeed.
working on this project with us.
It's an honor. It's an honor to work with you. I think
Well, and
we've.
I'm homesick for McDonald Lake and Glacier Park, so I get to look
Anytime. Come on
at
by anytime. Of course, you know
it.
Montana very well. It's beautiful here. Beautiful here.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
I think that is going to be the end of our podcast today. What a great podcast that was. A lot of great information, a lot of great solutions. Corey, is there anything that you want to say before we go ahead and close out the video?
No, I think we covered a lot. Thank you so much, Catherine. That was fantastic. And yeah, I think
All
that
right,
was a good
folks,
one.
that's a wrap. That's a wrap. I'm your host, James White, of course, along with my co-host, Corey Lynn, for the Solution Series. You can tell your friends about it by going to solari.com or coreysdigs.com. And we want to thank our special guest, Catherine Austin Fitz, today for all that valuable information. Till next time, this is James White for Solution Series, saying bye now.